This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Hey guys, before we start, a quick shout out to Alpha Dog Nutrition for sponsoring this podcast. Alpha Dog products are now available at dusupply.com, and you can use code ALPHADOG15 at checkout for 15% off and a credit for free shipping to try it yourself. Now let's get you to your podcast.
Where's Fielder?
He's gone to the dogs.
Welcome to the Gone to the Dogs podcast. This is Steve Fielder, your host. And man, am I feeling good tonight. I am recording this episode on St. Paddy's Day. Now, I do have a little of the Irish in me. My Grandpa Haley, my Grandma Fielder's dad, was Irish. And John Haley, so all of you out there that were wearing the green today, I hope you had a great time. Hope you didn't drink too much of that green beer and suffering the consequences of that. But just another of the great holidays that we've celebrated in this country, the greatest country in the world. Also, I'm reminded that today, Monday, which is March 17th, as I'm recording this, it should air with you on the 24th of March, is the first night of the PKC World Championship in Salem, Illinois. And I had been contacting Billy Bell and wanted to talk with him about his friend and partner, Roger Schaible, who recently passed away. Many of you will remember Roger as being the owner of the Redbone Dog Hunters, Famous Amos, that won the Purina Award several years ago. I remember well the night that we presented the Purina Award to Famous Amos in the hotel there in Nashville, Tennessee. And Billy has consented to come on to the show, so we'll be, without spoiling that, we'll just let you know to be on the lookout for that episode. It'll be coming up pretty soon. Ellen, I've had just the most amazing weekend, just this weekend past. On Wednesday, before the weekend, we loaded the Bronco up and headed up to Columbus, Georgia, home of Fort Benning. And many of you may want to correct me there and say, no, no, Steve, that's called Fort Moore now. And for a brief time, it was. But I learned on this trip that Fort Benning's name was changed to Fort Moore. I assume the reason was that the original Benning was a Confederate soldier. And without getting into the politics, you do not want to get me started there. The name was changed to Fort Moore, I understand, who was a great soldier himself. But I was to learn after we got up to Columbus, Georgia, that indeed the name has been changed back to Fort Benning. The only difference is it's named for a different soldier with that last name that served in World War I. But at any rate, we made about a 5 to 6 hour trip up to Columbus, Georgia, where we met our daughter, actually Ella's daughter, Susan. And we were there for the purpose of attending the graduation ceremony and all that that entails. At the Maneuver Center of Excellence, United States Army graduation ceremony for Alpha Company, 2nd Battalion, 58th Infantry Regiment. The reason that we went to that graduation is that our granddaughter, Alyssa, was graduating. And Ella had attended her what they call turning green ceremony. And those of you who have more recently been in the Army or have, relatives, friends, family in the Army know that that was the first stage of her basic training. And then she went into this session we attended was to recognize her turning blue. She didn't actually turn blue, but she received that blue, what is it they call it? They don't call it a rope, although that's what we called it, that the soldiers wear on their uniform over their shoulder. And it signifies that they have completed another phase of their training. And this was just the most amazing ceremony. It touched me in so many ways. I guess the reason being primarily her being our granddaughter, of course. And number two, my dad did his basic training at Fort Benning in the U.S. Army back in 1939. He was 19 years old from Tennessee and joined the Army in Nashville, and they shipped him off to Fort Benning, and that's where he did his training. So I just wondered as I walked around there and I viewed the parade grounds and all that, I wonder if my dad had walked on those grounds as well. Perhaps he had, perhaps he did. But one thing I know for sure is he would be extremely proud to have been there to observe the ceremony. The Army does a great job with this. And, the infantry, someone said during the orientation, the infantry is the toughest job, in the Army. I know there are advanced degrees of combat soldiers that one can attain. I'm reminded of my friend Keith Durkee, who's been on this podcast. He's a coon hunter, has won a world championship with his Walker Dogs, was in Special Forces. He was also in what they call Delta Force. And, he was one tough guy for sure. And really thank Keith for his service. And urge you to go back and find the episode with Keith in it. You'd enjoy it a lot. But anyway, Alyssa, when she decided to enlist in the Army, chose the infantry, and we were all a little bit wide-eyed about that. Alyssa is 19 years old, soon will be 20, and, a very attractive young lady. I'm being a little bit biased there, I'm sure, but I absolutely can assure you that she is, and just is a student at Rutgers University in New Jersey, where she lives. And she chose the infantry. And I thought, little girl, you've got a lot of hard work ahead of you. But, man, she came through it with flying colors and surprised us at the award ceremony as being one of, I think, about a little over a half a dozen, maybe eight, 10 possibly, of the soldiers who were promoted right there at the ceremony due to their superior performance. And she was the only woman among that group. So we're just doubly proud of Alyssa and just had such a great time. The thing that impressed me so much is the way the Army brings this training right up in our faces, so to speak, where we can tell what these soldiers have been doing and how they're trained. And then there's one of the things was a demonstration of an infantry squad as the gunfire was going off and the cannons exploding or whatever it was. I know it was loud and it was real. And I couldn't imagine facing that myself. And out of the smoke on the far side of the field comes this eight-person squad of infantry soldiers across. And it's kind of like an arrow shape as they come closer and closer to the grandstand where all the family and friends are seated. And very, very moving. And then as they come closer and they spread out, we're told what each soldier's job is and what weapons that they're using. And so for just a very, very impressive, moving presentation. And then to be able to go to the museum that's just next door, the infantry museum, the sign said is rated one of the top museums, top 10 museums in the country. Extremely well done. Going all the way back to the Revolutionary War and coming forward and getting closer, to things that we can identify with. I served in the Air Force during the Vietnam War, although I did not go to Vietnam. I went to Japan and served in a support role there. But, through Korea, World War I, World War II, Korea, the Vietnam War, the Iraqi war, desert war in the desert, and then to the war on terrorism and the urban warfare and all those things are so amazingly graphic in the display. Just very, very well done. And it is free. You can get off the interstate there in Columbus, Georgia, at near Fort Benning. And anyone, I'm sure, can point you to it. There are signs there on the highway. Do it if you get a chance. Go and see the Infantry Museum. And those of you that may be in the listening office audience that served in the military and especially in the infantry, my hat is off, my hand is on my heart, and I am so thankful to you for the job that you've done to keep this country free. And we are indeed free because of that. And all this talk about the army reminds me of an article or a piece that I wrote sometime back prior to writing my book, Gone to the Dogs, A Coon Hunter's Journey. And I had considered this piece for the book, but as things began to come together and pages became at a premium and so forth, I did not include this in the book. But I think it certainly deserved to have a place in the book. But what I thought I would do today is to share this with you because I think that it is very, very important for the day in which we live, as they say. Before I go any further, I want to thank the good folks out at W Hunting Supply, DUSupply.com, for sponsoring the podcast, Buddy Woodbury and family and all the staff out there that do such a great job in providing supplies, equipment for hunters and houndsmen especially. Great graphics, great, clothing items, all of those things, DUSupply.com. Also, we'll thank Alpha Dog Nutrition. They make a great line of supplements for our dogs that keep them in top shape, top condition. I had to laugh as I saw my granddaughter, and I kind of grabbed her by the bicep, and it felt like a piece of hickory. I said, "Girl, you're in shape." And she just grinned as she always does. But, man, I tell you, going through 6 months there of all that intensive training really puts a body in shape. I could use it if I could stand it. But I do want to thank those folks. And always my buddy Big Mark Zepp, Zepp Predator Calls. And all that Mark does, his dog boxes, his coats, his squallers, everything is always first class, top quality. And you can't go wrong at markzepp.com. Okay. The piece that didn't, make the cut, so to speak, in my book is called, appropriately with our subject so far, The Volunteer Army. The only qualification is a servant's heart. I wrote this. I'm going to share it with you now, and we might discuss a little bit when I've completed it. I will warn you that this gravelly voice is going to be the only voice you hear throughout this. So if you've got something else you need to be doing, well, I hope you do it with gusto, and I hope you have a great day. But for those who would be interested in hearing about the Volunteer Army, and it does definitely apply to our sport of coon hunting with dogs, get a cup. Sit back and prop your feet up if you can. If you're running equipment at work, be careful. But at any rate, here we go. Prior to making the Kennel Club business my life's work, my travel to coonhound events was limited to an annual trip to Plot Days, the Grand American in South Carolina, and the UKC hunts that existed within 100 or so miles from my home in southern West Virginia. The ads for the hunts I attended appeared in the monthly issues of American Cooner and Full Cry magazines, and I would go when I could find time and the money to attend, just like the rest of us. Prior to joining the Air Force in 1969, I spent 4 years in college and had little in terms of time or resources. After I returned home in 1973 from Japan, I began to attend the hunts with more regularity. Like most of the other hunters, I showed up at an event, tied my dog to the tailgate, went inside to buy a cup of coffee or a bowl of chili, and joined the other hunters around the table, swapping lies and generally having a good time. I took no notice of the planning or work that went into the events. They appeared in the magazines. I went, I hunted, hunted or showed, and I came home. No problem. In 1978, when I accepted Fred Miller's invitation to join the staff of field representatives that would be required to work the regional qualifying events for the newly established UKC World Championship, I soon found myself looking at the events from a different perspective. It was on those weekend assignments that I first became intimately associated with one of the nation's largest volunteer workforces, the phenomenon I have come to call the Volunteer Army. I'd be remiss if I told you that I wasn't a recruit of the Volunteer Army at an early age, having served as secretary of my local club while in high school. But like most wet-behind-the-ears recruits, I really didn't realize the scope of sacrifice that some good folks were willing to expend to build this sport in its infancy, its glory years, and in the years to come. Some that are reading this article, and it did appear previously in the American Coon magazine, are card-carrying members of the Volunteer Army. You are the glue that holds things together at your club. Others are probably ignorant of the concept, and still others may take the tack that it doesn't apply to you personally, so who cares? I've written this before, but it bears repeating. When asked if ignorance and apathy were the main causes of the problems in our sport, a coon hunter replied, "I don't know, and I don't care." Hopefully you aren't that guy, and you will indulge me a bit as I pay tribute to some of the soldiers in the Volunteer Army. The first time I went to United English Coon Hunters Association breed days, it was in the spring of 1983, and the event was held in Clay City, Indiana. There are things I remember about that event, good and bad. I'll reserve the bad and tell you the good. Jim Simpson of Shelbyville, Indiana, was the bench show judge that day, and he and I became lasting friends from our first meeting. Jim served our sport for many years as a show judge and as a field representative for UKC. I was honored to present him and fellow pioneer Bob Browning with Distinguished Service Awards at the AKC World Championship in Greenville, Indiana, in 2007. Jim and his wife, Patty, were wonderful people. I hope Patty's still living. I haven't heard. But they fit perfectly with the family of representatives we had in those days. I also met two people at English Days that would, as I made several trips to Western Indiana to attend various UKC events, make a lasting impression on me. And I'm talking about Wayne and Nina Horn. If you and I were to search for someone to get a job done, we may have overlooked Wayne and Nina at first glance. The first impression I had was that of good-hearted, down-to-earth, hard-working people. They weren't flashy dressers or fancy talkers. Wayne worked as a master of hounds, and Nina worked the kitchen at Clay City and at Saline City, as I recall. They were just country folks. Their son, Gary, was a coon hunter and often guided casts at the hunt I attended in that area. Mike, also known as Hippie Newport, was another of the good people I met in that neck of the woods. And Mike, God rest his soul, has passed on. The one thing I noticed about Wayne and Nina was that they were always busy helping people. As I yearned to know more about this amazing couple, I learned that each Christmas or Thanksgiving, I don't recall which, Nina had a huge gathering at their home, inviting folks from miles around and sometimes feeding 100 or more. No, she didn't operate a restaurant and there was no cover charge. She did this year after year because she had a servant's heart. I'm sure the expense and labor were astronomical. As my work took me off in other directions, I lost track of the horns. I suppose they both have gone to the banquet table up there, where no doubt they're being waited on hand and foot, as they did so ably for others down here. But I do often think of them, how sweet, spirited, giving, loving people they were. They share the rank of 5-star generals in the volunteer army. It was but a few years before this time in my life that I also met a couple who were well into their retirement years and who had already earned the rank of senior officer in the volunteer army. Fred Miller, who was my boss and president of UKC, his way of selecting field representatives was to make sure that all 6 of the Coonhound breeds were represented. I became a field rep in 1978, and it was my extreme pleasure to meet Paul and Francis Toon of Franklin, Tennessee, that were representing the black and tan breed at that time. Now, if we were to look up the term Southern Lady and Southern Gentleman, we'd certainly see photos of the Toons at the top of the page. The thing I remember most about Paul and Francis, their sweetness and warm spirits aside, was the fact that they were both well into retirement years, and yet they were still giving of themselves to our sport, driving the long miles, missing the sleep, worrying over the money they were in charge of, and all round working as hard as people half their ages. My eyes are damp with the memories of these incredible people who've long since gone to their rewards, but what a legacy they left for all that knew them. Way up in the North Country of Michigan's Upper Peninsula lives a couple of my very dearest friends, Joe and Nancy Hudson. Joe is a native Youper, and Nancy grew up in Vermont, where her family operated one of the inns for which that area is so famous. Nancy learned to cook at an early age and is a phenomenal chef in her own right. Their courtship and marriage several years ago, a second for each of them, centered on their common love of plot dogs and bear hunting. Living in an area where making a living has always been a struggle, they work hard all summer so they can bear hunt come September and survive those harsh UP winters when the hunting's done. No strangers to hard work when the sport of hunting with hounds was threatened by outside forces like the Fund for Animals, Joe and Nancy formed the highly effective and profoundly respected Upper Peninsula Bear Houndsmen Association to lobby in Lansing for hunters' rights. The result has been nothing short of phenomenal. Each year in March, for many, many years now, the Hudsons spearhead the annual banquet in which funds are raised to perpetuate bear hunting. Hundreds attend, and thousands of dollars in guns and raffle prizes are provided, and additional thousands of dollars are raised for the war chest. I can't mention the Hudsons without getting personal, and I hope that if they hear this, they'll forgive me, but they are my friends, and they'll just have to. They just finished the banquet up there, and anyway, it was another successful event, as I heard. Years ago, when I first attended the March banquets, I was invited to spend time at the Hudson's home near Escanaba. They had moved into a new home. It was actually an older farmhouse with renovations in progress, and it wasn't completed. Since the kitchen sink had not been installed, after cooking a delicious meal for what always seemed like an army of folks that appeared there at supper time, Nancy was forced to do the supper dishes in the bathtub. After witnessing the Hudson spending long hours into the night at the hotel where the banquet is held, setting up all the raffle items, and a myriad of other things that were required to make the 500 attendee banquet a success the next day, and seeing them rise early the next morning and work into the wee hours of the following day, then packing up when the event was through, I was amazed at their energy and dedication. Of course, as great leaders, they had lots of help, but the point is they led by example, and they did it all for free. It became apparent to me that they would have put the time, effort, and expense into finishing their home instead of helping hunters, Nancy would not be doing dishes in the bathtub. She could have had a kitchen to envy the governor's mansion. Add them to the staff of generals in the volunteer army. Each of us will have our own list of generals, I know. Some have gone to their eternal rest, while others have still have their hands firmly attached to the plow. Sadly, some have become discouraged and given up. Standouts in this army of volunteers that come to mind are Ed Abel of Oklahoma. Despite being blind, legally blind, he's been a workhorse in the political arena, protecting the rights of hound hunters in Oklahoma and nationally for many years. Max Summerlin, my buddy down there in North Carolina, despite his sight and health challenges, for many years was Mr. Coon Hunter in the state of North Carolina, accomplishing much as an unmovable force when it came to interpreting and enforcing UKC rules in the Tar Heel State. Max also served as a field rep for UKC and as the master hounds of the Winter Classic for many years. You know, Max is one of the few people that I know, my cousin being another, that received a heart transplant. And sadly, Max lost his wife, Shirley, here a couple of years ago. And I know that things have been a struggle for him, but man, he's solid gold in my book. Coon hunters in South Carolina have a workhorse in David McKee. My buddy David McKee, he serves as president of the South Carolina Coon Hunters Association and the Grand American Association, and as the field rep and national youth director for AKC. I'm also reminded of the late Bill Murray from Cesar, Illinois, who headed the Illinois State Coon Hunters Association and served as a board member of ACHA for many years, and left a void in the hearts of coon hunters in the land of Lincoln that may never be filled. The clubs in Aurora, Kentucky area, and especially the Hardin Club that put on 10 straight days of PKC events each October, stand tall in the formation of honorable members of the Army. And I'm so glad to hear that I think the national championship for PKC is returning to the tennis center in that land between the lakes there. Well, man, that will be a great one. I'm going to try my best to make that one. On and on goes the list of those proudly serve in the volunteer army. I'm reminded of Jim Bolin that led the Blue Tick Breeders and Coon Hunters Association to a position of prominence, of Lee Crawford that inspired lovers of the Tree and Walker Hound the country over with his integrity, and the list goes on. There are far too many to mention here, but and you'll no doubt recall someone whose name should appear when the volunteer army is mustered for duty. These words are not primarily intended to be a life lesson. Rather, I just wanted to send a thank you to those who have so faithfully served, and as an inspiration to those that aspire to do so. Events require lots of work, and there simply is no money to pay those that do that work. The sport depends on volunteers, from the guy that flips the burgers to the woman that sends the paperwork in, and all those in between. Except for those that work for the registries, of which I was one for many years, everyone is a volunteer. I can attest that those that are in positions with the registries are there because they love the sport and are doing much more behind the scenes for you and me than they're being paid to do. At the club level and nationally, the ranks of the volunteer army, sadly, are shrinking. According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, and this is an old one, and it's continued, unfortunately, this way, the volunteer rate for the year ending September of 2013, it had declined by 1.1%. The Bureau said at that time that 62.6 million Americans volunteered through or for an organization at least once between September of 2012 and the next September of 2013. This figure represents the lowest rate since 2002. These figures came from a survey they did of about 60,000 households. Volunteers were defined as persons who did unpaid work except for expenses through or for an organization. Any official of a coon club today will readily believe these statistics to be representative of our sport as well. It was interesting to see that among employed persons, 27.7% volunteered during that year, ending in September. By comparison, 24.1% of unemployed persons and 21.9% of those not in the labor force volunteered. So I guess it goes to show if you want someone to do a job, find a busy one. Clubhouses are built by troops in the volunteer army. Volunteers schedule events, keep the books, make the deposits, and pay the bills. Volunteers cut the grass and change the light bulbs, and yeah, they unstop the toilets when they overflow, and mop. Man, do those boots track in lots of mud. If you're a coon hunter that believes all you have to do is spend your entry fee at the club to cover your obligation to your sport, you're copping out. You're getting your money's worth of fun, and sometimes more when you go to the trophy table or the payout desk. If you aren't volunteering your time now or occasionally, you're a liability rather than an asset. It's plain and simple. When I was a kid, I volunteered to drag the scent for the field trial. I cranked the cage across the water race pond, and I ordered the trophies from Bill Boatman and Company. It was a labor of love, and I just wanted to be involved in the sport. Later, that volunteerism led to a lifelong career. Now, I know that can't happen for everybody, and I was particularly blessed to have the opportunities that this sport brought me. But I can tell you that what I did as a kid and what I witnessed behind the scenes at the clubs across the length and breadth of this country gave me a profound respect for those that volunteer their time so you and I can enjoy the music of the hounds. The next time you look at the list of wins your hounds accomplished or the number of titles or earnings you've won, remember it was all made possible by members, many, many members of the volunteer army. Why don't you enlist? You're listening to my voice. Our sport really needs you. And it's true, folks. It really is. We need you out there. And the clubs have always been the heart of this sport. And the club members, you know, the old guys that are too, like me, too old to keep up with the cast, have traditionally been the ones that flipped the burgers and served as the master hounds or hunt director. But without the clubs, you know, it just doesn't work. So I hope you enjoyed that. I guess I should have put that one in the book because it's certainly important that we all do our part. Being that the PKC World Hunt is going on this week and a lot of things going on, and I know people are going to be watching that, checking the PKC website, prohound.com. I remember many, many nights spent in the tennis center at Aurora. What great times we had. And I just wish everyone a lot of luck. By the time this thing comes out on Monday, there will be a new PKC World Champion. And I hope that I'll get an opportunity to talk to those successful people. I'm going to cut this one a little short today. And we'll have a guest back on for you the next time. These podcasts are a labor of love for me. And I thank Buddy Woodbury so much for the opportunity. And I'm looking forward to springtime. It's beginning to come forth. I noticed up in Georgia last weekend as I was up there, trees are beginning to bud. You can hear the peepers a little bit at night. And so it's that time of year to get that young pup out there. And I've got one here, old Boo. Ghost is his name. And he's he'll be 8 months old tomorrow. And, man, is he ready. And I am, too. So, anyway, from Steve Fielder, your host of the Gone to the Dogs podcast, I wish you a great spring hunting with your hounds. If you get a chance to attend the events, I wish you much success. I hope you'll have safe hunts, enjoyable hunts. Be a good sport. You know, don't be that guy that nobody wants to draw. When you get to be an old codger like me, you'll be glad that you made friends instead of enemies. Okay, one more time. Steve Fielder saying, if you're looking for me, you know where to find me. I've gone to the dogs.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.